are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 12, 2016. My name is Michael Brooks, pinch hitting for Sam Steeder on the four-time award-winning Majority Report. A Yom Kippur Wednesday. I hope everybody's out atoning, especially Sam. We are broadcasting steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. And joining us today, Wozni Lambre, Big Woz. He's a host on ESPN True Hoop. He's core crew on Two Dope Boys and a podcast, sports writer, political analyst. We're talking about the Trump and Republican Civil War. We've been wanting it to fully break out for a long time, and now it finally is. And is that why, and Trump in general, is that why NFL ratings are tanking? And why is it that Colin Kaepernick is demonized, but he might be actually saving the game in an era of charisma-free NFL players? We'll talk about the sport of protest and a lot more. Plus, Russia and Turkey are soothing relations. What does that mean for the Kurds? We'll get to that. Oklahoma's governor has asked the state to pray for oil, and I guess that's another area where Muslims are more effective than Christians, because the Saudis don't need to pray. Booyah. And climate activists disrupt tar sands pipeline coming out of Canada. Hillary Clinton and Al Gore hit the trail with an electrifying speech on climate change. I'm joking about the electrifying part, but it was on climate change, and it was important. Two leading U.S. civil rights organizations call for the decriminalization of personal drug use. The American Civil Liberties Union and Human Rights Watch teaming up on that. And finally, we'll probably get to this in the conversation. Big Wise is actually going to be here all day co-piloting this with me. The man is in studio. Hillary Clinton might be finally willing to let Donald Trump be hung around the necks of Republicans. Not a moment too soon with all of the outreach that happened over the summer. And Ben Carson, he's coming through. And he wants to wonder why Breonna Keeley on CNN, you ain't never been hollered at before? Really? Because I think if you have, you would not be surprised by what Donald Trump said. I mean, King David had 500 concubines. I mean, give me a break. All that and more on today's Majority Report. Everybody is here. Big Woz, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We'll get straight to it. So we've actually talked about this. Big Woz, also a regular on Two Dope Boys and a podcast, is in addition to ESPN True Hoop, which I've mentioned before. We've had a number of conversations about this sort of, there's almost like three different wings now of the Republican Party. You got your actual base, actual Republicans who are down with Donald Trump.
Right.
Then you have people who I would say, like my friend who I had on a couple weeks ago, Luke Thompson, who's a very smart, very forward-looking kind of Republican strategist. I disagree with him about almost everything, but he basically wants Republicans to kind of be like a upper-middle-class, multicultural center-right party, right?
Sure.
So he has recognized that you can't support Trump and build that party.
Right.
Then you have the Republican leadership, people like Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, and most Republicans, and actually we had this great thing today. Senator Fisher from Nebraska. She had retracted her endorsement a couple days ago, but now has retracted her retraction after Trump's.
I'm guessing she got a hold of some internal polling.
Yeah, maybe she got a hold of some "we will kill you" tweets. The incoherence, though, of that position, because even what's happened over the last couple days, where Paul Ryan's like, "Oh yeah, I'm not going to campaign for him, but I still support him," and John McCain reversed his endorsement, and now Trump is going at them hard, and they're like still surprised by this. Mm. First of all, they're surprised that there's a repercussion for not endorsing Trump anymore, and they're surprised that their base is angry, even though their base is Trump.
Right. A part of me finds the idea that Trump hijacked the party as problematic, because it's not true.
Right.
This isn't a hijacking in the sense of any meaningful Republican ideas.
Right.
If you talk to a guy like Paul Ryan, I'm sure he'll tell you, well, our party is about cutting taxes, making sure businesses are able to do what they do freely, which he would call, the free market. And that's basically what we're here to do. All these other constituencies is how we hold that main goal together.
Right.
But, there's been polling for years to show that their base, they don't want Social Security cut or Medicare cut,
right,
or any of the things that a guy like Paul Ryan would say is part of his core values.
Right.
So I don't think Trump has hijacked it in a sense of he's brought these new ideas forth.
No.
I think he's brought the main ideas to the fore, to the
black
center.
Black people, not great. By the way, Hispanic people, big league rapists.
Right.
Yeah.
And pillagers.
Pillagers.
And just pillaging. Bad
people.
Bad people.
Big
Someone's
bad.
Doing the pillaging.
And so I think that's what you have here. To me, watching as somebody who is not a part of the core Republican constituency, what I see is a bunch of
it's funny. I see
shocking,
a black dude
right?
in a Mets hat from Queens, and I'm like, I was actually shocked when Waz told me he wasn't voting for Trump.
Shocking. Yeah. What I think is a group of people who thought they had a monopoly on the Republican base's affections.
Right.
They look at Trump as an outsider. He has no credibility with them as far as they're concerned. So they're like, how could they ever fall in line with that guy? We're the ones who have been allegedly supporting you for 30 years. Some people say 20. Some people say 50.
But I think that the point that you also made recently, and this has come up again, like on your podcast and in different conversations, is like, and I feel, funny because I have, again, I keep thinking of my friend Luke, who we had on a couple weeks ago, had a really great conversation. But it's like the hashtag Never Trump thing, because that's the next thing that's going to happen. Right. There's going to be a conspiracy, and we've talked about it on this show, between the mainstream press's addiction to drawing false equivalencies, even in this environment, and then what the Republican leadership, to the extent it doesn't get overrun by the alt-right hordes, which is going to be the other thing that will happen after the election, because Trump isn't going to go away if he loses.
Well, these people don't just disappear.
Exactly, but they're going to try. But they're going to enter into a conspiracy together to act as if this was an aberration versus a natural expression of the logic of a party that their god, Reagan, announced his candidacy talking about states' rights in a town where 4 civil rights workers were murdered.
Right, and part of this kind of reminds me of 2008, 2009, when we saw the Tea Party emerge,
right,
where we, where the mainstream media led us to believe that this was some crazy populist grassroots uprising.
They're just tired of government,
right? Which really all it was is, let's conveniently act like George Bush never happened,
right?
Let's just find a way to wash the stink off of us. And act like we didn't support every single last one of that man's disastrous positions, policy positions, two wars on a credit card, all kinds of, you know, terrible things that people supported, but now we're deficit hawks. You know, all we care about is the debt. All we care about is wasteful spending. So, yeah, of course you're going to see something come out of this where it's like, we got to wash the Donald Trump stink off of us. But the problem with that is these people don't disappear.
Right. Right? Well, and the other problem is that with the Tea Party phenomenon, the con still worked of the elites and the base.
Right.
Because the base could go out and even with, you know, and they could still already, we saw it, right? They would, you know, go to town meetings carrying guns, all the don't tread on me, Obama with the Hitler mustache, which is actually kind of funny, all of that. And then, but somehow it could still get filtered through a production process, which ended with, you know, Paul Ryan and all these other people on the Sunday shows being like, you know, people are just really angry about out of control spending.
Right.
And what Donald Trump actually did, and you pointed that out before, the paradox is that in a very disturbing and dangerous way, you know, he stopped speaking subtext on race and bigotry. Right. But then on the flip side, and I don't trust anything Donald Trump says. If he was elected right. president, of course he would cut.
How could you?
Yeah, of course. No, I'm saying, so I don't believe, you know, he would sign Ryan budget, no problem.
Of course.
They would be sitting there doing trades like, well, how about in exchange for cutting Social Security, I get to have the you're a big league loser law. And that means that anyone who said Ivanka wasn't hot goes to Guantanamo.
Of course.
And they're like, all right, fine, Donald. It's okay. Whatever you need, as long as, you know, we can get tax cuts. But he did converse. He stripped it away in both sides. He stripped it away in terms of making the racism overt and the bigotry overt. But then he also went to these same people and was like, actually, you all know, first of all, yeah, we don't want to cut Social Security
at all.
These trade agreements don't work for you. So he put those elites in this quandary that they can't synchronize the way they did with the Tea Party, because they're getting hit from both ends. Because right. it's like, well, actually, I'm not really obsessed with giving the Koch brothers tax credits.
Right, I'm more obsessed with white nationalism.
Right, with white nationalism. Why can't you be overtly anti-Muslim?
Right. But this was always a problem, right? When they formed this sort of GOP coalition of, and we haven't even touched on this, which is the evangelical Christian people.
Right.
Which, you know, as somebody who was raised Christian myself, it's hard for me, growing up, breaking news, right? I don't want to lose any credibility with my atheist liberals out there. Don't worry, I'm with you guys. But no, it's hard for me. It was always hard for me to square that circle of you're a hardcore Christian, but, you know, your coalition involves business interests. Because if you know anything about Christian values, it's basically that rich people are evil.
Right.
Rich people are the problem. So they always had these...
Well, I don't know, Sonny Rollins.
You know, so they've always had this weird coalition that just... It was just a coalition of convenience, really. So now...
Well, but that's also where, like, the whole prosperity gospel and all of that comes
right, but
in, right?
But that's just guys finding a way to fit... To sort of retrofit that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, well, how do I find a way to be Christian and pro-business?
Right.
Boom.
And pro just like plutocracy.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I think, well, let's get, because we're going to pivot to the sports angle in a minute, but I do want to just play some of this sound here in the first half, because this is just beautiful. Because now in the past couple of days, and the other thing that's great about this is that there is no, you know, we can take it all on a moral level, and I don't take, you know, I mean, I don't have any respect for someone like Paul Ryan,
right.
But theoretically, you could say, you know, there has been some people, like, okay, if we're being really fair, you say, like, okay, John Kasich, Ben Sasse, senator from Nebraska, extremely, you know, far-right guys, whatever, but they have actually said and maintained, we're not endorsing this dude.
Right.
It's not happening, right? Okay, so fair enough. Then you have, you know, Marco Rubio, little Marco, who's completely humiliated by him, doesn't think he could be trusted with nukes, but yeah, I'll vote for him.
Right.
And then we have, you know, the Paul Ryans of the world being totally incoherent. And I love it, because now Trump can go. Trump is like back now in the Republican primary, which is his favorite place
right.
to be.
Of
now
course.
It's like he murdered Vince Foster.
Because he's got the most soldiers at the end of the day.
That's his squad. So now here he is in the no-spin zone with Bill O'Reilly. And let's just take this in.
One new ground rule I have put in. If at any time during the interview Mr. Trump feels he is being treated unfairly, he has been asked by me to say that. We will give Hillary Clinton the same courtesy should she decide to talk with us.
I'm sure.
So, joining us now from Dallas is Donald Trump. All right, first of all, you tweeted today, it is so nice that
pause
the
it.
Shackle...
I'm sorry. He truly is the only, like, adult that makes duck face like that. It really is true. It's kind of incredible. All right, and I like this unshackled tweet. It's like, I'm like the Django Unchained of being
That's right.
an asshole. All right, let's go.
It's that the shackles have been taken off me, and I can now fight for America the way I want to. What exactly does that mean?
Well, we've been having a problem. We have millions and millions of followers. We set records in the primaries. We have a group of people that want to see America be great again. And Paul Ryan, you know, open borders and amnesty and lots of other, and bad budgets, by the way, very, very bad budgets. Frankly, the only one that Obama negotiates well with is Paul Ryan with the budgets, because that's the only negotiation
all right,
he can
but
win.
What
he certainly
shackles,
can't beat Iran.
What no, shackles did you have on?
So, the shackles are some of the establishment people that are weak and ineffective people within the Republican Party, senators and others, and Paul Ryan, led to a certain extent by Ryan.
They were holding you
nasty
back?
To the nominee.
They were holding you
not
back?
Not question holding back, no, but they're not giving support. They don't give the kind of support. You know, we got more votes, more than 14 million votes, more than anybody in the history of the Republican primaries, Bill. And they don't give the support that we really need.
Okay,
now,
but I'm still confused.
I think
confused.
I'm better off maybe without their support, if
well,
you want to know the truth.
You might so be, but I'm still confused. You say, okay, the shackles are off, and now I can really do what I want. I mean, what are
well,
you going to
do
that you haven't done? I mean, are you going to be more outspoken?
I don't think I'm that outspoken, to be honest with you. I don't think I'm not outspoken at all. No, I don't
there
think
you are.
I think I've been very nice.
Well, it's not about to be nice. I didn't say you weren't nice. I'm saying you're about as blunt as they come in political circles. That's why you won the primary.
I don't think so. Look,
no.
I went to Ivy League schools. I went, you know, I mean, I'm
so
not.
So did I. And look at the big mouth on me.
I think, I know, and look how we turned out.
Okay.
But the fact is that I think we should get support, and we don't get the support from guys like Paul Ryan. He had a conference call yesterday with congressmen, with hundreds of them. And they practically rioted against him on the phone. One person stuck up for him.
Right.
So I'm just tired of non-support, and I don't really want to support. You know, if he calls now and wants to, this happens all the time. If you sneeze, he calls up and announces, isn't that a terrible thing? So look, I don't want his support. I don't care about his support. What I want to do is I want to win for the people because...
Waz, this is beautiful.
Man, that clip is illuminating in so many ways because it's a conservative trying to confront conservative logic, right? Base logic. He's O'Reilly's like, wait, no, explain this grievance that you have. And it's basically, and what Trump is saying, if I may speak for, you know, my fellow Queens native.
Watch yourself there, Jabari.
If I may speak for Trump, what he's saying is, I no longer have to be nice to these establishment phonies.
Right.
I don't actually need you. Right? Because I'm the person wielding the actual power here. I'm the one with millions of supporters. Like, I don't need your little nice GOP branding. I don't need that. I got the mean branding, the real branding of our party.
Because that's where the base is. And that's
right.
why the whole thing is a paper tiger. It's like, it starts to look like, you know, we've talked about this again, and other slices of these kind of politics. Like, if you go to, like, the no labels world, or the, you know, the people who worship Michael Bloomberg, and it's like, okay, you know, basically austerity plus social moderation. Now, if you go across the country, that politics in good and bad ways is very unpopular in the sense that, you know, most
nobody
people
wants.
Yeah, no normal person wants that politics, but it's gonna get a major hearing in the media because, you know, that's problem solving in the green room for Morning Joe.
Right.
And what he's doing is he's kind of showing that actually elite Republicanism is pretty much the same thing.
It's a joke.
It's a joke.
There's
no
actual
brand there. The constituency is Vince Foster was murdered. She's a lesbian. Why didn't anybody go to Obama and say that he was a Muslim socialist to his face? And he's back just winning the Republican primary. And then the next step is, I think, after he loses, it's a natural media launch.
Right wing and bitter clinging proud clingers.
There you go.
and you know the beautiful thing of the past couple of days, it kind of lays bare the naked cynicism of these dudes, right? Especially somebody like John McCain.
Yes.
Where it's like, now that my primary is over, I can come out and be against this dude, right? Where Paul Ryan's like, I literally can't come out and be against this dude because Trump voters are my voters. This fallacy, this fantasy, really, that there's this huge constituency of reasonable Republicans. I hate that term, by the way.
Yes.
Which is something that, you know, people in the mainstream media try to, you know, try to sell to the general public of, no, actually, those alt-right people, they're on the fringes. They're marginalized. Well, if they were, Paul Ryan wouldn't need to suck up to this guy. Neither would McCain. Neither would, you know, the quote-unquote nice Republican Marco Rubio. And Rubio is the most beautiful example of this to me.
He's a joke.
It's so obvious. He knows his voters are Trump voters. They are one and the same. And so all of these people, never Trump people, nobody who's come out and been never Trump actually had any real skin in the game. And a part of me feels kind of hypocritical because I'm like, would I put my job on the line for principle? I don't know that I would. You know what I'm saying? But you can call a spade. You can call it what it is. Cowardice.
I can't. You like that?
That's why you liberals are the real racists.
Yeah, Michael. That's right. That's right. That's
prime example.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
There.
Wait, what? Very socially conscious. All right. Yeah, that's speaking, this is apropos for just what you're saying, because we saw this the other day, right? And again, the complete incoherence, we've already played this clip, but like, of just not even having, and I agree with you, he's boxed in. So there's this fantasy that you'll hear from, you know, again, like actually, ironically, of course, like the smart Republican strategist, people like Mike Murphy or whatever, like, oh, you know, they should have just, you know, especially taking the Predator tape that came out as the opportunity to totally cut bait when it's literally impossible. And this is the visual right here that shows you why.
For we as conservatives are offering solutions. This is exactly what we will do here in Wisconsin. We will deliver our 10 electoral votes. We will fight for our conservatives and we will offer this country solutions and we will meet the moment for what it is. Thank you for coming out for Fall Fest, everybody. Thank you so much, you guys. God bless you all. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You can't even do the fake wave. It's just like...
Well, it's sad.
Frankly,
it's pathetic. Well, I mean, but you saw it right there. And now we basically see, like, the young, charismatic, like, future face of conservatism basically turning into Reince Priebus in real time.
Right.
Just like, oh, what the Christ.
Well, Ryan in 2012 they're throwing a bone to the base with him.
That's right. And now he, because you can't keep up as soon as the gates are open. Let's get, just before we get to the front half, let's talk a little bit of NFL, though.
Right.
Because I want to get into, first of all, this is interesting from just like a broader culture piece, and then we'll get to the politics. It had been kind of assumed for a long time that, you know, NFL was one of the only reliable ratings getters, period, right? So that's why, you know, we just basically, it was a $50 million buy from the NFL to get TV rights for it, because the idea of having a, you know, an actual audience that will be there
live is,
you know, incredibly rare commodity and resource. But NFL ratings are down 14%. This season.
Right.
Now, would you give me like the couple of potential reasons why that's the case and then migrate that maybe back to what's happening politically in the NFL and all the rest?
First of all, the NFL has been growing in audience and viewership for a solid 15 years now. And you get to a saturation point where it's, you can't grow anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So some of this is just a natural regression of you know, we've gotten about as big as you can possibly get. But the problem with that is the NFL has sold itself as something that is just not going to stop.
Right.
We're going to just get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and part of that thinking, you know, which goes hand to hand with the saturation is like it used to just be Sundays and Monday nights.
Right.
Now it's Sundays, Sunday afternoons, Sunday nights, Monday nights, and Thursday nights.
Right.
So you just the product has sort of been diluted a bit in that they're just giving you a lot more now. And so, you know, a 10% hit for the NFL is still people, every other entertainment entity would kill themselves to do NFL numbers.
Right.
But, you know, they've sold themselves as this product that's constantly growing. You know, they're always trying to grow the pot, whether it be with, you know, breast cancer awareness or just completely trying to sanitize the game and trying to make it, instead of this, you know, basically a violent sport, it's like, no, this is a family product, essentially, is how they sell it, because they want to sell it to as much people as possible. But, you know, what I think you're seeing is just, at a certain point, it can't get any bigger.
But that's a question I have, I think, particularly from the perspective of this audience, is, and because it's kind of interesting, because the NFL has made waves in two different ways culturally recently. Because on one extreme, and I'm wondering if, you know, does this play a role in the diminishing ratings? There's the conversation on concussions. Then there's the conversation on, you know, that really blew up, like, I actually don't even remember now exactly when it happened, but with, you know, Ray Rice, like, you know, brutally, you sure. know, beating his girlfriend at the time, and then maybe even just more importantly, just the general NFL indifference to those issues, right. to abusive women, to sexism, and then of course, you know, because from my perspective, like, you know, the breast cancer awareness thing was like, right. Like, right. yeah, they put on a pink ribbon and then they'll get right. suspended one game for engaging in, like, you know, horrific abuse. And then even, no, it's not the NFL, like, then you had the thing that happened at Penn and you're like, you right. know, this legendary football program, and all of a sudden everybody's implicated in, you know, well, one guy is a serial predator, and then right. the rest of the program helped him cover
another
it up.
Another guy enabled it.
Yeah, right. another guy enabled it. And so before we get to the positive, which is the controversial was the Kaepernick stuff, like, is that also wearing down on the game, that people are just starting to be like, well, wait a second, like, it's brutal, they all get concussions, and they were all, you know, there's all these health problems associated with it, so it's kind of like watching gladiators. And then on the flip, there's like this culture of, like, you know, abuse here that it seems, you know, that the league turns the other way on. Or people don't care.
This may surprise you and other people who yeah. know me, but I kind of take a cynical take yeah, on yeah. that. I don't think that affects ratings much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think as long as the NFL kind of puts a nice face on it, that mm-hmm. they're trying to weed this out, that they're trying.
Right.
I think that's all people kind of want. It's right. like, are you trying to stop this? You know, they're doing what it takes to be seen as somebody who cares about domestic abuse, who cares about player safety and things of that nature. I don't think the viewer actually cares much. I don't, because at the end of the day, you have to understand what you're watching. You're watching basically people fight. You understand? It's a brutal sport. You know, this idea that they want choir, that the audience is, requires that these guys be choir boys at the same time, I think it's nonsense. If you ask anybody who's a big NFL fan in an honest moment, they'll tell you, man, that it kind of takes a kind of crazy, kind of more violent person to excel at the sport. And do they want a less violent person at the expense of the product, the entertainment?
Well,
value?
I think they want people to not engage in,
of course, nobody
abuse.
Nobody wants,
and I think though that this disturbing thing again is the abuse, and then the way the game has overlooked it. I'm
as
not
much
saying
as people might be disturbed by it, I think that you're right that it won't affect who watches the game yeah. one iota.
I don't think so. And you know, I've
so
I've
that's not the cause of the
I don't
the
think
decline.
So. I think that stuff is way down the line. Like right. meaning my kid probably won't play football.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm probably not gonna want my kid. I'll probably put him in soccer.
yeah.
You understand? I think those effects are down the line. Right now in the moment, I don't think, you're seeing that. I'll give you an example. I was watching the Saints Niners playoff game, speaking of Kaepernick. It was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, I think it was Pierre Thomas. He's heading to the goal line. He's about to score, and he gets hit. He gets absolutely annihilated, right? And he gets concussed right there on the spot, and he's kind of starched as he's falling to the ground, and the ball kind of falls down, right? And the Niners recovered the fumble, and the announcer's like, oh, what a hit! They recovered the fumble. And in my head, I'm watching the replay, and they're watching the replay, and all they're talking about is the hit.
Right.
And the fumble recovery.
Right.
I'm watching it. I'm like, dude, he just got concussed.
Right.
Like, you can literally live act. You can see this guy. He's starched and he is out cold.
Right.
I remember watching in high school the jacked up segments on ESPN.
Of course. That's how the game was sold for the most part.
So if it's sold through violence
Have it both ways.
Right, right. And that's the other thing that happens, I think, with the NFL too, specifically, is that, right, you can't have it both ways. And then if you're like, well, yeah, you're selling and promoting a product that partially gets off on the violence of it. And then it's like, you know, and then in terms of like, you know, player, you know, conduct or whatever, that's been, you know, that's gone on for decades.
And I think another part of the player conduct issue that is lost in this is that most of the NFL players are anonymous.
Right.
Like if you see
journeymen,
like the best, say, offensive guard, right? In the NFL, if he walked right in this studio and slapped you in the face, you wouldn't recognize him. Period. These guys are mostly anonymous. Sports like the NBA, for instance, where those guys are not anonymous. Those guys are famous.
Well, it's a very intimate sport.
Right.
I mean, they're playing like they're totally exposed.
Exactly.
They're the opposite.
And so I think a sport like that where the guys aren't just anonymous worker bees, it's a bigger problem when they're doing terrible things in the public, breaking laws and things of that nature.
Because
it's
more
of a public
brand.
NFL is just another guy. It's like, okay, you kick him off the team, next man up. The game goes on.
Then let's get to the Kaepernick thing, because I want, you know, you have really two different really interesting perspectives on this. Because one is like, and I think we can always, you know, register the general critique that everybody will be familiar with. Like, huh, that's really interesting that, you know, nobody's concerned about, you know, Ray Rice knocking someone out, a woman out cold until the video is released and it's an issue. That's like, oh yeah, whatever, you know, suspend him for. And then everybody's all freaked out about, you know, someone exercising their political conscience. That all of a sudden, you know, and the stereotype of all these, you know, moron like sports reporters are like, yeah, I mean, Rice got a little out of hand. Wait a second, you're kneeling in front of, you know, like.
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, well, yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't, she was not notorious RBG on that one. But regardless, the other thing that you get into, though, is like that tension that comes up with, like, that you hit again, that, like, regardless of how well compensated these are still laborers. They're still like in a management worker relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's what it comes down to for the most part. I don't think the fans, for whatever reason, in sports in particular, they just don't identify these athletes as part of the labor force.
Right.
And, you know, obviously, understandably, it's not hard for me personally. But it's hard for a lot of people to empathize with a guy who's got $50 million in the bank.
Sure.
When you make $50,000 a year.
Right.
You understand? It's hard to feel any kind, like, feel sorry for what? The guy's rich. Who cares?
Right.
You know, and that's what it comes down to. And I feel like a part of the fan culture is that they view these guys as working for them.
Right. Right, you know, versus like, no, they are specifically working for billionaires that are working their asses off to rip you off on stadium deals.
Right.
Like, that's what's happening.
Sure. And you'll hear this all the time on Twitter. It's like, I pay that guy's salary.
No, you don't.
You know what I'm saying? I say this all the time.
Unless you're Green Bay.
Right,
then
sure. Which is, you know, publicly owned.
Right.
But I'll say this all the time on the internet. I'm like, dude, these guys earn their money. This isn't some charity, it's some handout. If that billionaire owner can afford to pay out, you know, $160 million in total salary, can you even imagine what he's getting back
right.
in return? Like this, that's what these guys are.
Or even
in
if
for.
It's just a vanity project, and he
right.
doesn't care.
Of course, yeah. they're not. These players are earning every single cent, and you know, a lot of times people don't look at them as laborers; they look at them as just rich pricks, for lack right. of a better term, entitled guys who don't know how good they have it,
right.
quote unquote.
Well, that's pretty racialized. What about?
But another thing I want to say too is about the NFL and their audience specifically.
Yeah.
If you look at the demographics of the NFL viewership, skews whiter, skews more conservative in how they vote.
Right.
So that plays a big part in how these things tend to get handled.
Right.
Right. Where the NBA, it's like, we don't care about gay pride. We don't care about being out front of these sort of more progressive issues because our audiences skew less white, more progressive.
Yeah.
You understand? So they understand.
I watch NBA. I don't watch football. So I'm like a perfect example. The stereotypical
NBA guy is a guy who lives in an urban environment and is probably white and is like, I don't mind gay people.
Wow, you just captured my essence. And that brings us to Kaepernick, right? And we actually talked about this. We did do an episode on this on Two Dope Boys in a Podcast because we contrasted, you know, in the Panthers with Cam Newton. A couple, you know, people remember a year or two ago, you know, Cam Newton was sort of like the face of this very racialized backlash against, you know, an NFL player who wasn't even political. He was just kind of like unapologetically who he was, not sort of like,
right.
I don't know. Not as conciliatory. And that freaked a lot of people out. And the Panthers hired Frank Luntz to figure out.
But that speaks to what I just said.
But it speaks exactly to what you said. It's exactly what you're saying. On the flip, and that's what I mean, that's another interesting thing about the 49ers, is like, you know, Kaepernick is getting a lot of heat, but he's also doing it in San Francisco.
Right.
He's not doing it in North Carolina.
Sure.
And then,
as my man Charlie Pierce likes to say, the newly insane state of North Carolina.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So play on that kind of demographic, but then at the same time, you know, Goodell and others, and certainly the 49ers coach, they've had to give Kaepernick his space. And
he's
catching on to a degree. And then his jerseys are flying off the shelves. So at the time when, like, you were saying there's more worker bees in the NFL, it's less star-driven, that might be affecting the ratings too. Well, Kaepernick is creating a lot of hatred, but he's also creating a lot of love.
Right. I think what you're seeing with Goodell, what you're seeing with Chip Kelly, it's the recognition that our league is majority black.
Right.
So I can't come out here and be completely opposed to what this man is doing because his message is a pro-black message. Right. So it's a recognition of, you know what? We smack these guys over the head very often. We can give them a little bit of leeway here.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not going to give a full-throated endorsement to what this guy's doing. So you see, they're towing a very fine line there. And all that is, again, is a recognition of, you know, their actual labor force.
Yeah.
The thing you're seeing with Kaepernick is, one, he plays a premium position, right? The quarterback is the most public position. The quarterback of every team, not every team, but for most teams, is the face of that
franchise. Or as Sean Hannity would say, he's on the bench, second string.
Well,
that dude says that like as if anybody could do it. Like as if tomorrow Mac could be like, I don't really want to hang out here anymore. I'm going to go be a second string quarterback on the 49ers.
And also, too, it ignores the fact that, one, Sean Hannity, you're a complete hack. If Colin Kaepernick was as skilled and as good at his job as you are at yours, you would have never heard of him.
He wouldn't be in the NFL.
Right. Do you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's in the top one percentile of football players in this country.
Right.
He is elite in what he does. You have no relation to him in that sense. So, you know, Hannity saying that's ridiculous.
Right.
But what you're seeing with Kaepernick is that you wouldn't... I mean, me personally, I always had a problem when we asked these guys to do, athletes, public figures who just happen to be black, to take these sort of political stances, because I'm like, I don't know if these guys are equipped to sort of carry this message.
Explain that.
Meaning, Colin Kaepernick is a dude who's basically spent his whole life specializing in one skill.
Right.
You understand? He doesn't have time to read books and become a historian about the racial problem, the racist problems of this country and its past. He hasn't had enough time to become well versed in these issues because what he's doing is highly specialized. He has the amount of hours, you know, like Malcolm Gladwell talks about the 30,000 hours. His 30,000 hours are not in the history and the politics of America.
Right.
His 30,000 hours are in football.
But he's done a pretty good job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's he's kind of turned me around on the issue. Because before this, I'd say, man, these guys aren't, you can't expect Colin Kaepernick or the exact opposite of him, or Russell Wilson,
right,
to be as well versed on this as Ta-Nehisi Coates. Right? And who, for me,
I don't really mess with Ta-Nehisi Coates, so.
Well, yeah, no, cool. I mean, you're one of the real racists. Yeah. You're a liberal. You're a white liberal, a real racist.
No, if so I was a real white liberal, Ta-Nehisi Coates is a genius. Which he is, but I'm
right,
just
but
around.
You know, but that's my thing. It's like you can't expect these, because for me, as somebody who is black, newsflash, cutest.
Are
sound
we
effects.
On the split screen? So I did not realize before. No, I'm just playing. All right, go ahead.
But you know, for me, if we're gonna have somebody out in front of this issue, I'd rather it be somebody who was well versed on this. But I think what you're saying with Kaepernick is like, if you actually engage in these topics and you're able to be articulate in any way, it's quite effective.
Yeah, because that's the other thing about it that has struck me. I mean, I agree with you, you know, generically that like, if you are a public person, you have a public platform in any way, and you choose to engage in something, you need to at least do what
some
he
homework.
Does. Well, and what he does, right? You need to do a little bit of homework, and you need to be able to be in a locker room and field stupid questions and answer them effectively, which he does. So done. But then people take it in the other direction where it becomes – it's like, first of all, like Colin Kaepernick's job is to do exactly what he's done, which is that just by that symbolic act, he's raising –
he's raised awareness.
And then the equation flips from, and you see this with Hollywood too, it goes from, well, I don't care what you think about, you know, fill in the blank, football player. I don't care what you think, movie star. Okay, and then, okay, sure, there are going to be some movie stars and some football players that, you know, they're just not equipped. Sure. Right. But then what happens is that someone like Kaepernick comes out and he's like, no, actually, I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm an articulate guy. I can do a press conference, whatever. And then it flips to like, well, why isn't Colin Kaepernick released a policy memorandum on the future of policing?
Right.
You know, then it's like, well, I mean, he's alienating people. Then it becomes like this micromanaging from first you're a moron who shouldn't touch anything. And then it's like, actually, yes. You're not Ta-Nehisi Coates.
So shut up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's the double-edged sword that people run into. And I think Kaepernick has been effective, and just as you said, he has kept the topic, the issues at the forefront with what he's doing. Every Sunday, there is a camera on that man in front of millions of people kneeling during the national anthem.
That's it.
And people are
following
that lead. As long as
he's
doing that, people are like, is he still doing that? Well, yes.
I've got a question on that, though. So
he's going to be doing it until he's arthritic with the racism of this country.
Well, I'm just saying, it's not going to have the same effect if you do the same thing over and over again. And, you know, people have been wondering, how can we spread this? I wondered, like, why doesn't the crowd get involved? Like, I don't know if you, like, raise a fist or whatever you do, but to
show... The crowd in what sense? The stadium crowd?
Yeah, the stadium crowd.
Why would they get involved? They don't agree with him.
Well, some of them might.
If you agree.
Like, some of them might. And then you have a visual show of, like, okay, I mean...
No, I think that's interesting.
At the majority, it might not be everyone at the start, but you might have pockets. And then, and just to register. Because it's probably going to be better in the stadium crowd than it is at home anyway.
I disagree. I think... All right, I'll give you an example, right? You go to I spent some time at Penn State. I went there for a couple of years. And if you go to a football game, if you're not standing while the team is on defense, people literally will curse your ass out. They're literally like, what the hell are you doing? Stand up. right? So this idea that people in the stands are going to do that, I think you're opening yourself up to some Trump rally type of stuff where you do that. Kaepernick can do it because he's protected. He's amongst his teammates and there's security there. People in the stands, if you're one dude amongst a bunch of patriots, for lack of a better term, I think that's a little tougher. That's a little tougher to ask because overwhelmingly, when you look at the numbers, somebody texted me the stats. It said that white Americans are basically 64% against what he's doing, and I think like 24% in favor. Black Americans are 74% in favor, and I think 15% opposed.
We really got to up our game, white people.
Well, you know, I think that you're underestimating how many people, pockets of people, would want to do that at an NFL game, and you're underestimating what he's saying, which is even more severe. I mean, you already have a situation that's a powder keg with two teams, fans intermingling to the point where they have to have plastic beer bottles that don't have lids on them because they learned the lid lesson because it can still be filled with liquid and you can seriously injure someone with it. I mean, they have to take precautions and people
get
hurt.
There was a time when going to NFL games was fun.
People get hurt at every single game. And so to divide
they might as well get hurt over something relevant.
I mean,
well, look, yeah, I agree. I agree. It would be much more interesting to have protests than football games.
Awesome. I think we're asking, you know, guys to basically be like John Lewis, you know, crossing, no, seriously, like, put it like this.
Ask somebody,
and I talked about this the other day because I like to make fun of sports fans from certain markets, right? If you're, ask anybody who's ever gone to an Eagles game as a Giants fan, you are literally going in there into a war zone. And that's just for people that love the Eagles. Now, you think about people that love the flag. It's you're going. It's dicey territory.
Well, I mean, but down low, I love the flag. That's not the point. But anyways, I know. We're not going to be debating those subtleties when we take our knees in it. All right, we got to get to the fun half. Waz is going to stay with us. We got a bunch of sound to get to. We have Ben Carson explaining.
Ben Carson, what a guy!
Wait, you never been hollered at before, Brianna? What? We have more Donald Trump. He's doing great things. Barack Obama confronted some Alex Jones protesters, and he was bemused. Katrina Pearson continues to amaze. And Mike Pence had an anti-John McCain moment. We'll get into Russia and Turkey are synchronizing. How's that going to affect the Kurds? We got a whole bunch of stories in the fun half. We've got some great sound on that. Erdogan was on Turkish Fox talking about that. It was hilarious. I'll translate and make fun of. JustCoffee.co-op, fair trade tea, coffee, or chocolate. Become a member of the Majority Report today at majority.fm/become a member. That is fundamentally what sustains this show. That's why it's unbought, unbossed, unstupid, and unfiltered. Subscribe to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. If you haven't checked this out yet, I think you get maybe a little bit of a flavor of what we do on it.
Big Waz episode on Tuesday.
Big Waz episode is the latest, yes, and sir. I'm glad that everybody's learning about my friend, the great Big Waz, Wozni Lambre. Two Dope Boys and a Podcast on iTunes. That's the number two. Our numbers are growing, and I really appreciate it. Give the Majority Report a rating and a review on iTunes. It helps us climb up the algorithms. Even if you're a member of the Majority Report, subscribe to the Majority Report on iTunes. We're past 100,000 on our YouTube channel. Let's get it to 200,000. Let's not play around here. All right, we'll see everybody in the fun half. (Phone rings) 646-257-3920. The IMs are open.